And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, goals! Absolutely loads of them. The men put on a five-star showing against West Ham. The women put eight past Bristol City to reinvigorate the title race. And the under-21s win a 5-4 thriller. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. Let me be clear, it's not over. There's no time for sentimentality. All work drinks are cancelled. Just between me and you, listener, I think producer Lucy's motivational talks are getting worse since she's become a permanent staff member of The Athletic. But hey, maybe it'll get a response out of me, Matt Davis-Adams, and my two Chelsea experts today. Good morning, Liam Toomey.
Hi, Matt. I can see that you're sitting in a chair, but I want to know, how long did it take you to build it? Asking for a friend.
That was a great quote, wasn't it? We had some fantastic Chelsea quotes this weekend. Simon Johnson's back with us to give us some more. You okay, Simon?
Yep.
There's a good one. Putting that one on the wall of the podcast dressing room. We have got a lot to get through today, but it's all fun, which makes a refreshing change. Let's start with some premature adjudications. I'm going to kick us off simply by doubling down from my one on our last pod. I think Trevor Chalobah is now getting in that England squad. Prove me wrong. Simon, what you got for me?
Benoit Badiashile's brother has been replaced by Benoit Badiashile. He's back. He can start the Todd Bowley chant all over again.
Benoit Badiashile's brother actually plays in goal for a Spanish team in the third division, I think.
Oh, good research. He's done some research. Has he got another brother?
They're called Burgos. I say plays in goal. He hasn't played since the Copa del Rey defeat against Mallorca on the 7th of January. But I think, and I don't know this for sure, I reckon that must be why he has B.Badiashile on the back of his shirt, right? Because he wants people to know that his brother's also a footballer. What a lot of time wasted on the Badiashile family's footballing career here. Liam, let's move us on. What's your premature adjudication, please?
Mine is that I think Nicholas Jackson will end the season with more non-penalty goals in the Premier League than Mo Salah. They're both on 13 at the moment.
Nice.
Good one. Okay. Like that.
Yeah.
Someone's actually giving it some thought.
Will he end up with any yellow cards for dissent added to his total? Because he seems to have cut that out of his game and he's added plenty to it. Right, we've got an awful lot of goals to get through. So let's get down to business.
And it's played through by Caicedo brilliantly for Jackson. And there's number five.
Chelsea 5, West Ham United 0. A sensational attacking performance from the Blues to hammer the hammers and claim a second derby win to nil in the space of 4 days. Simon, Liam and I were all at Stamford Bridge for this one. And what a fun time we had. Maurizio Pochettino said it was a brilliant game. It was amazing. They reacted in the right way. I was so happy how we competed on Thursday. We have talented players to create chances and score goals. Here's an email from Alex. He emailed soc@theathletic.com to say, not a thought on the game per se, but just an interesting thing. I've missed two PL home games this whole season from my season ticket. They've been the 6-0 and the 5-0. Should I just stop going altogether? Yes, Alex, you should. In terms of the team that was selected for this game, Liam, I was a little bit concerned when we saw just the one change to the starting lineup from Thursday. Obviously, a tight turnaround, and West Ham had a free week. Thiago Silva coming in for Alfie Gilchrist. I worried about fatigue. I needn't have.
Yeah, and I also thought there was a decent chance that Chelsea might get moised, in part because I saw David Moyes walking into Stamford Bridge on Thursday when I was there for the Chelsea Spurs game. He was doing his usual in-person scouting ahead of the match. And I remarked to a few other people in the press room that it's pointless trying to scout Chelsea in advance, because from one game to the next, you have no idea what you're going to be facing. But as it turned out, we got not just a continuation of the team that played against Spurs, bar one change with Silva coming in, we got a continuation of the performance as well. And I thought that was really impressive. It was clearly the thing that Pochettino was happiest about afterwards, was that Chelsea had built on the things he'd praised most against Spurs, the energy, but the collective effort, players fighting for each other and really pushing for the team rather than for themselves. And I highlighted in my match piece, and Pochettino was very keen to highlight in his post-match press conference, the fourth goal where Noni Madueke squares to Nicholas Jackson. Chelsea players have finally realised that you can pass in that situation. You don't have to try and score yourself. And especially given that those two players were at the centre of the penalty debacle against Everton a couple of weeks ago. From a narrative sense, it was a very satisfying marker of growth, I think, in this young group of players, and one that Pochettino was very keen to emphasise afterwards.
And it wasn't just that goal, Simon, that illustrated that growth, I don't think. Obviously, we got the Cole Palmer goal, which is fine. He always scores. But then Conor Gallagher, it took so long for him to get his first goal of the season, is now up to 7. And Madueke is proving that he can be an effective team player. And even Jackson with the one-on-one, which is the one thing that we've been so critical of him, particularly in the FA Cup semi-final. Maybe it's because he thinks he's offside, but he goes through and slots that away confidently. So, you know, there are tangible signs of progress individually and collectively.
Well, it is important, of course, that as Pochettino said the other week about players showing that it's not Cole Palmer FC. Okay, it didn't work very well against Arsenal, although I think you always need Palmer on the pitch, but it's important that others chip in. Gallagher has gone from starting the season, I counted, hopefully correctly, on the whistle piece, he started the season 30 appearances without a goal for Chelsea, and now he's scored 7 in his last 18. And it should have been 8, of course, because he's contrived to miss from 3 yards and diverting Cole's cross onto the crossbar from close range. But Madueke, of course, I wrote about him post Villa Park, and he's backed up that performance with two really good performances against Spurs and West Ham. And I just hope that now sort of people who go to games can actually see what sort of getting behind a player can do. Similarly with Jackson, that's a really good stat that Liam read out just now. I think he should have scored more, and there's some very high profile misses this season. But I think if you were to sort of just take Jackson overall, you know, young player, barely played, you know, sort of had much of a run as a centre forward in his life, very raw. First season in English football, he should be praised alone for staying fit all season, because we talk about where would Chelsea be without Cole Palmer, but where would Chelsea be without Nicholas Jackson? You could also argue, because who had been playing up top all these months, given the dearth of options with Nkunku being out. So there's so many positives, but you just hope it's not all too little too late in terms of the European places, because it is going to be a tight battle. I think they deserve to qualify for Europe overall, but then I would say that, wouldn't I? But I genuinely believe it. I think they've been a far better team than Manchester United this season, for one. Newcastle, there's a different kind of argument, because they've kind of bookended like the start of the season and the back end of the season. They've actually played some good stuff, but no, it's on an upward trajectory, and suddenly we're sort of thinking, oh, the season's going to finish just when you don't want it to. Now they're going to lose to Forest and Brighton away, and straight out of Cobham has a totally different vibe again. Back to normal.
No comment on that first one. Yeah, worth remembering on Madueke and Jackson. They're both 22 years of age, as is Cole Palmer, whose birthday is today. As we record, I imagine if you asked him about it, he'd say something like, yeah, I was 21 yesterday, but it's my birthday today, so now I'm 22. Let's talk about a couple of other individuals, specifically Trevor Chalobah and Conor Gallagher. Here's an email from Eric who says, I had a thought/delusion that maybe Chelsea are actually a little business savvy. I was hoping you could gauge my sanity. Please pose this question to Luke so he can put a positive spin on it. Don't bother asking Simon. Sorry, Eric.
No, worry.
Although we the fans want Chelsea to lock up Connor and Trevor to long-term contracts, it actually would not make any business sense to do so now. Everyone knows Chelsea need to do some selling in June. Our assets are visible to everyone. Matson, Lukaku, Breuer, Gallagher, Chalobah, etc. If we lock up Connor, our potential buyers can play hardball for Matson, etc. Since they will all know we absolutely need to sell him to meet FFP. However, if Connor is not locked down until after June 30th, then there's a possibility we'll sell him instead of Ian. Therefore, Dortmund slash other buyers may be forced to activate the buyout clause instead of forcing Chelsea to take a cut price deal. Does this actually make any sense? I'm just trying to hold out hope that maybe we don't lose our second best performer this season. Liam, where are we with the Connor contract and the Chalobah is for sale, not for sale? If anything is going to change the owners' minds, it's got to be the performances the pair have put on over the last month in Chalobah's case, but really over the course of the season for Gallagher. But I get the impression that minds maybe aren't for changing.
Well, the first thing to say is I love a good theory and I appreciate the level of thought that went into that. There are a couple of things to flag up. One, Chalobah actually is on a long-term contract. He's not in Conor Gallagher's situation. I believe he's under contract till 2028. And it feels like from the moment Chelsea committed him to that contract, which was quite early in the new ownership, they've been trying to sell him. So they haven't necessarily been game planning for this summer with Chalobah. It's been a case of he's been on the market really for at least 18 months. And the same with Gallagher, really. If the backstory weren't what it is in terms of Chelsea encouraging interest from Everton, you know, interest in him from West Ham, Spurs, Newcastle, none of it being too emphatically batted away, although Chelsea do, clearly, if they want to sell Gallagher, they want a good price for him. And most of all, the fact that they have not been proactive at all in getting him tied down to a new deal. I mean, what Gallagher's done in recent months, yes, he's added goals to his game, but his actual performance level has been very consistent. I'd say he's been Chelsea's second best player after Cole Palmer.
And he's up to 9 assists for this season too, right? So it's not just goal contributions he's making in terms of directly scoring.
Yeah, he's been good in a variety of roles. And when he's been used higher up the pitch, he's beginning to find those final third impacts now to add to everything else that he's doing. This has been by far the best season of his career. He's still in his early 20s. He's trending upwards. He's the kind of player that you could see becoming actually a really important player in a top team, even if he's not the sexiest player for supporters in terms of the way that he plays and his skill set. You know, I've compared him a bit to what Jordan Henderson became to that great Liverpool side. And I know there are players in that Liverpool team and in that Liverpool era that supporters will remember more fondly than Henderson, but he was a very, very important part of the trophies that they won. And I think Gallagher has a similar potential to become that kind of leader and that kind of presence in a team that does great things. But there's no movement. There's no news on a contract. I don't think there'll be anything before the end of the season. And then it's decision time. And I felt for a long time that the main determining factor in the decisions that Chelsea make this summer will be financial imperative rather than the evidence that's in front of them on the pitch. I think if, as a lot of people outside the club believe, they do need to sell to stay on the right side of PSR, then Gallagher, as long as he's not committed to a new deal, is a prime candidate to be sold because they can't let him go into the final year of his contract. But equally, he's got a lot of control over his situation. He's turned down moves away before. He wants to be at Chelsea. If he wants to go into the final year of that deal, he ultimately can, because they can't just rip up that year of a contract or make him go somewhere else he doesn't want to go. So there's a decent chance that Gallagher is at Chelsea next year, but there's also a decent chance that this situation remains unresolved and really up in the air, and it could get a little bit uglier.
The only thing I'll add to that is, on the plus side for the ownership, you're looking at those two going, oh, they're worth a few bob. They can demand.
They didn't want your view, Simon. They didn't want your view.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Eric. Sorry. I forgot.
To be fair, I haven't exactly drowned them in optimism.
Yeah, thank you for filling in so well for me on the doom front. But yeah, no, I'm sorry, Eric. I'm going to say my piece. I don't care what you email. The problem Chelsea have on one hand, clubs know that they want to sell, they need to sell. Conversely, Chelsea can say, look at the value of these guys. I mean, seriously. I mean, Gallagher, England squad, his age, he's getting better every season. The only thing going against him is the 1 year left on his contract, but look how that didn't hamper the Mason Mount sale. And Trev, I wrote about Trev as well in my, I don't know why I'm calling him Trev, it's not like we're best pals. But I wrote about him, he was another of my topics on the Whistle piece after the game yesterday, and he's playing great. And that pass, by the way, for the fourth goal, some of the commentary was like, oh, you know, I'm not saying it was yours, Matt, but some of the commentary I heard was, oh, it's just too easy.
If Thiago Silva had played that pass, which is what I initially thought had happened in real time, because I didn't actually see the pass get played, but I saw the area of the pitch it came from and just assumed it was Silva. That would have been all over social media for days for Chelsea fans, waxing lyrical.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think maybe readers perhaps do know that we don't get to watch the game completely because some of the things we say and tweet about or whatever, but I'm typing away. This often happens. You're typing away and you react to the crowd noise. That's when it's a way of you sort of using the crowd to know that something interesting is happening. You've got to look up. And I just looked up and saw Madueke with the freedom of the penalty area to set up Nicholas Jackson. I hadn't actually seen in the past. And the TV monitors in the Chelsea press box now, certainly where I sit, is like my eyesight without glasses. Very blurry. It's very hard to sort of see anything, really. So it was only when I got back and watched the goal back that, and from various angles, that you saw just how good a pass that was. And Madueke's run as well. You should sort of give credit for the run in the first place. But anyway, point is, sorry, Eric, those two guys, I hope they're still at Chelsea next season, but I fear they won't be.
Yeah, on that pass, John says, beautifully executed from Chalobert to Madueke, who then taps to Jackson for the easy goal. Blues look like a competent, hungry team today. If you want to hear somebody fawning over it, check out the highlights on the official website and you'll hear our friend Sam Parkin gushing over that Trev Chalobert pass. Somebody else wanted to get your opinion on, Simon. Sean says, if Cucurella's inversion is the real reason we're performing so well in the last 2.5 games, what happens when players come back from injury, in particular Gusto, James, Enzo, etc.? Now, I would put you two as Enzo apologists. I wonder if your opinion of him is still as high, given, I mean, it's the Cucurella coming infield thing, right? But it's also what it's done for Caicedo in the last few games, who looks like a player transformed now. And when Connor's sort of playing next to him, he gets the license to go forward and join the attack so Cucurella can come infield. It's a really interesting little tweak that Pochettino's made, but it seems to have been to the benefit of Cucurella and Caicedo in particular, and maybe to the detriment of Enzo if and when he comes back.
Yeah, but also Chelsea are hardly going to sideline a £106 million World Cup winner. You know, this is why Pochettino or whoever else will have to come up with a better solution, a better bond. Pochettino, you could argue, apart from the Cucurella decision, which he made at halftime at Villa Park, has he stumbled across this? Almost because he's been left with no choice with the amount of injuries to sort of just, well, these are the 11 players, I've got to somehow make them fit. But it's a very valid point of concern, though, in terms of what do you do with Enzo if it has a negative effect on this momentum. We're obviously not going to see it this season, the answer to this question, because he's out. But I would argue Casado's form has been on an upward trajectory anyway. But he has taken it in the last few weeks onto another level. And it's really good to see. Suddenly you're hearing the fans responding to him in a very positive fashion. You know, with every interception he makes, every tackle he makes. So I would rather concentrate on the positives for once. Crikey, must be a bank holiday or something.
Eric's really made an impression on you, hasn't he? Email again, Eric.
Yeah, you're going straight to the trash can, mate. And Cucurella, I'm generally like, it's, I'm a bit wary of going too much too soon with Cucurella, because he has got this tendency to throw in a great performance every now and then. But fair play to the guy. Like, he's really raised his level, and it just makes you think, if anyone should be concerned about their position at the club, it should be Ben Chilwell.
Just on Cucurella, he appears to have a bastion of loyalists in the Shed End. That's where his name is ringing out on a regular basis now at Stamford Bridge. I think the Matthew Harding lower remains to be convinced, but the Shed End is on his side.
Perhaps they all share the same shampoo product.
It's always interesting with players like him, isn't it? Because obviously it should be Cucurella and therefore Estrella and Paella in the chant, but that's just not going to happen with football supporters, is it, Liam? So we've got Cucurella, Paella, Estrella.
Yeah, there's a level of linguistic nuance that I think is unrealistic. On Enzo, I think it's partly that I'm an apologist for his talent and partly that I'm a serial defender of functioning groins. And we have not seen...
It's a family show.
I think we have not seen the real Enzo Fernandez probably since the autumn. I think that's fair to say. And I think the Chelsea discourse on him has gotten way out of control among fans. I think fans are not accounting for the fact that, as he said in his statement after that surgery, he's been playing with the aid of injections and through pain for at least 6 months. And when you have a groin injury, you can't really run. Kicking a ball a long distance is quite difficult. Doing most of the things that you need to do as a Premier League central midfielder become incredibly challenging. And so I think if you want a reminder of what Enzo Fernandez can be in this team, I suggest you go and look at the clips of Chelsea from like August, September and the games around then, because he was dictating games. He looked really, really good physically. I thought he looked a level up physically from the previous season, where he kind of not had a break and had the World Cup and he looked absolutely gassed at the end of last season. But he came into this season in fantastic shape and you could see it. And then he got this injury. And because of Chelsea's other midfield injuries, I think he was required to play, and I think he felt a responsibility to play to try and help the team. That should probably be to his credit rather than reason to criticise him and say, oh, he's actually not that good, and judge him on performances which are absolutely inhibited. I remain convinced that him and Moises Caicedo can be an excellent partnership if they're actually close together in a midfield that's balanced. And on the Cucurella point, there are different ways to get to a midfield balance. We've seen a few different ways this season. This is just the latest one. And we don't know. It's worked for 2.5 games, but it's also the kind of tactical gambit that if teams see for 2-3 months and start game planning for, they might be able to develop some counters that we haven't seen yet against Chelsea. But yeah, Enzo is obviously going to be a big part of this team, and I think he should be, because he's one of the most talented players in the squad.
Yeah, and sort of, again, maybe it's bank holiday, you know, it's a kind of remember the day, where were you kind of moment, where me and Liam sort of agree wholeheartedly with each other. No, I totally, everything Liam said, I'm fully on board with. I think people have forgotten that when he was 100%, what a great footballer he is. And we got a flash of it at Aston Villa in the FA Cup. I think people have forgotten his performance that day alongside Caicedo, just how good that was. And that free kick that he scored was one of Chelsea's goals of the season. You also have to think, this guy's creative. It's Cucurella is not going to provide those defence-splitting passes. And as Liam sort of implies, that, you know, there may be a time when the Cucurella thing is figured out. It's only been a couple of games, so it's difficult to go a little bit too overboard with him. Fernandez is the kind of guy that's going to unlock defences with his passing when he's at his very best. And we've certainly seen that in the first 6 months of his Chelsea career, and in flashes since his injury. But yeah, he'll definitely be a part of Chelsea next season.
Well, it is 24 home goals in 7 league games for Chelsea. 69% possession they had in this match and 25 shots. The race for Europe is looking tight. Let's hear what Benoit Badiashile thinks about Chelsea's hopes of qualifying for Europe next season.
Yeah, we have to believe. We have to believe. We still have 4 more games to go, so I think we can do a great thing in this end of season. So, yeah, we have to choose on next year.
And that would be some achievement, wouldn't it? It's been a trying season, but to finish top 6 possibly is...
Yeah, we'll try. Like I said, we'll try to be 6 or, yeah. And yeah, we have to believe, just to believe, and we'll see after. I think, yeah, we are in a great, great moment at the moment, so we have to keep going and try to do the same performance every week.
There you go. We're consistently providing you with Chelsea voices that you haven't heard from before. Cucurella last week, Badiashile today. So, in terms of the Premier League table, we are recording this before Manchester United go to Crystal Palace on Monday night. As it stands, Chelsea are above them in 7th with 54 points from 35 played. Newcastle have 56, but their goal difference is effectively worth an extra point there. Manchester United also have 54 points before that game tonight, but their goal difference is inferior to Chelsea's by 10. To run you through the permutations... 5th placed goes into the Europa League. If Manchester United win the FA Cup, they go into the Europa League. If City win the FA Cup, the 6th placed team goes into the Europa League. The next team that hasn't qualified for Europe goes into the Conference League playoffs. Liam, do you think Chelsea are going to get into Europe? And how funny would it be if they ended up finishing above Spurs?
I don't think that's likely. But if you look at the trajectories of the two teams, it's certainly possible still. And it's pretty remarkable that it's possible. If you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I would have been extremely sceptical that Chelsea were going to get into Europe, and certainly after the Arsenal game. But given the nature of the last two performances and the fact that, as Pochettino is keen to stress, this group are beginning to function and think like an actual team, that is the most important development, I think, of the last couple of games. They've got a real shot. They've got a real shot of qualifying for Europe now and maybe even the Europa League. It's not going to be easy. I think, you know, Forest have got every reason to give Chelsea their absolute best shot in the next game.
I mean, they might, Liam, but they might not, because they might get a point back this week, and also Luton and Burnley play before Forest next week. So there's a chance that going into that game, actually Forest are already safe and it's Chelsea who need the points. I mean, I'm talking about the MDA fantasy of what happens next Saturday rather than the probable reality, but you know.
But even then, you've got the Callum Hudson-Odoi Ola Aina revenge game. So, you know, there's going to be motivation one way or the other.
Andre Santos going, can I have a kick for somebody, please?
Go back to Strasbourg. And then I think, you know, everyone assumed that Brighton were on the beach and then they went and beat Villa. So it's hard to predict these last couple of games. I think Chelsea still remain quite an unpredictable team. But the fact that they're starting to do the little things for each other and starting to do the less glamorous things, defending as a collective, as well as attacking as a collective, suggests that there's maybe a pathway to more consistency in these last 3 games. And if there is, the teams they're competing against are just as flawed as they are. We've talked at length about Man United and all of their problems. Newcastle have been very patchy this season. At their best, they're very good and very explosive in attack, but they're more than capable of dropping points in the last couple of games as well. So it's a long way of saying, I don't know, but they could finish 6th.
Well, Chelsea have answered the question to a degree about the home form. My stat that I'll throw at you is 17-3 is the aggregate scoreline for the last four home games, which have also all been wins. But it's away from home that's essentially let them down this season. They've only won 5 times. And now, you know, this is the time to... They have to put it right. I think they have to win all 3 of their last 3 games. And as has been suggested, Nottingham Forest will have a lot of motivation. I still think they'll still be tough opposition regardless of where they sit going into that game. And Brighton, I'm sure we're getting on to the under-21s in a minute, but there's nothing like Chelsea to motivate Brighton Football Club. I mean, I know Chelsea have got the better of them at home this season, but I was there last season when they absolutely ripped. Well, it was basically the start of the Graham Potter downfall, the 4-1 drubbing. And there's like a, what can we say? It's not a red mist for Brighton, is it? A sea mist? Does a sea mist, you think, sort of come across them when they see anyone connected to Chelsea walking into that building?
They're like a seagull looking at an innocent beachgoer's portion of chips and thinking, I'm having those.
I won't do the seagull impression. I almost thought about it. But they will be well up for this, I think. And if it's the possibility of stopping Chelsea getting into Europe, So Chelsea really do have to be at their best, try and take this home form momentum into these two away games. If they win these two, then it's game on. Because don't forget, the night that Chelsea are at Brighton, Manchester United host Newcastle. So you know that at least one of the teams is going to drop points. And then, of course, wouldn't it be a Chelsea thing if all those permutations, which gave me a headache when I quickly tried to read them during the game yesterday, as I was figuring out that Chelsea finished seventh. But if Man United win the FA Cup? Anyway, I don't want to give myself another headache. I think there was a possibility that seventh wouldn't get into Europe, but I might be wrong.
There'll be an Athletic long read up on that shortly. I have...
What, my headache?
Quite possibly. Before we move on from the men's first team, we had a question. I thought that said John Denver for a second, but he died in 1977. It is John in Denver who wanted to know, am I crazy for wanting to roll this exact team back next season, including Poch? Well, that has inspired our latest Spotify poll, which was, do you want Mauricio Pochettino to stay next season? I can tell you, as of now, 11:39 on Monday morning, 84% of the respondents have said yes. We'll have to see if it is the case, but you'd have to think it would be a strange decision to remove him at this point. A free week for the chaps now, as Simon says, three games left, starting at the world-famous City Ground on Saturday tea time. You know what's great? The women's team, they're up next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Kirby approaching the penalty area, centre left position. Kirby still going out to Wrighton, crosses it in for Beaver Jones. It had to be this time, and it's 8 goals for Chelsea, and that sees them go above Man City on goal difference. How crucial could that be?
Remember Thursday's pod where we moped about lamenting the sorry end to Emma Hayes' reign as Chelsea queen? Turns out we might have been wrong. The women's team put behind them the memory of that galling defeat at Liverpool to thrash Bristol City 8-0 in Hayes' final home game. Our friend, the Athletic's own Jesse Parker-Humphreys, was at King's Meadow for this momentous occasion and sent us this dispatch.
Wow, what an absolutely incredible evening. An almost indescribable evening at King's Meadow tonight. Obviously, Emma Hayes' final home game, but I hate to say it was overshadowed. It wasn't overshadowed, but oh my gosh, everything leading up to it turned it into a totally unforgettable night. Chelsea looked to be totally out of the title race when they lost 4-3 to Liverpool midweek. Stina Blackstone did them a big, big favour earlier in the day. Arsenal coming back from a goal down against City with a late, late double from Blackstone. For them to win 2-1 meant Chelsea knew that if they could beat Bristol City, they had the opportunity with their games to go to equal Manchester City's points total. They also knew that they were a long way behind Manchester City when it came to goal difference. And lo and behold, they found the goals. It was a slow start in some ways. They scored two in the first half. But by God, they got going in the second. Guru Wrighton and Aggie Beaver-Jones just absolutely relentless in particular. Shout out to Katarina Macario as well, who came on and really, really impacted the game. Sadly, no goal for Frank Kirby or Maren Mjeld, although they did both get on the pitch. Chelsea finished 8-0. They needed 7 to equal City's goal difference from today. So they managed to sneak an extra one in. It was crazy. You know, the fans chanting, we want 7, we want 8, we want 9, as the goals carried on going in. And you could just see how much the team were feeding off that. They looked like a totally different group to the one at Liverpool who could just not get control over the game at all. And, you know, at that point, it looked like everything was slipping away. And things can change quickly in football. Suddenly it looks like everything's back. And that meant it was a very buoyant mood to say goodbye to Mjelda, Kirby and, of course, Hayes. Emotional words from all three of them, particularly from Hayes, of course, who had written and recorded a letter, which was played out at King's Meadow. And I think, you know, a really sobering night in some ways, one where maybe it really sunk in that whatever happens now from Chelsea, it will never really be the same. You know, Hayes has been there for 12 years and that was her last night at King's Meadow. And there's been lots and lots of amazing nights at that ground. I'm sure that one, especially if Chelsea do manage to go on and win the title, will live long in the memory too. She was very demonstrative at the end about how the title race wasn't over. Again, a very different figure to the one after Liverpool, who hauled Aggie Beaver-Jones into her interview with Sky and said, you know, basically conceded it to Manchester City. Yeah, it was very classic Emma, I guess, to suddenly have this U-turn off the back of her team winning. But she paid credit to them as well for, you know, I guess showing her that it wasn't done. Maybe she did need that added belief from senior and junior players who all played their part tonight. And listen, if it was boring, it wouldn't be Emma Hayes, would it? So two more games for her at Chelsea, two more chances to try and win one last thing at the club.
Thanks to Jesse for that. Check out their piece on Fran Kirby up on The Athletic now. In case you missed it, Super Fran announced she's off at the end of the season too. Before we talk about that game, Liam, it's worth a brief reflection on Frank Kirby. Jesse's piece is excellent, but you think of the Chelsea women's team and all the success that they've had. Obviously, Emma Hayes is the first name that comes to mind, but Super Fran's not far behind.
Yeah, the most popular Chelsea women's player, I would have thought, of this era. And there's a fair bit of competition, but I think Kirby's been so beloved just for the way she plays, but also her personal journey, the amount that she's had to overcome to be the player that she is for Chelsea.
Which would have finished off most players, right? The things that she's gone through physically and mentally are extraordinary.
Incredible. Yeah, it's unbelievable that she's still even on a pitch, let alone doing some of the things that she's still able to do. And she's been an absolute key part of some of Chelsea women's greatest triumphs. And it feels appropriate, I think, that she's bowing out at the same time as Emma Hayes. You know, I was at the FWA tribute night earlier this season where, I mean, we played some of the audio on this podcast, didn't we? But I thought Kirby's tribute to Hayes was probably the best one. I thought it really, really heartfelt. I've heard Kirby in interviews before and sometimes she strikes me as a little bit introverted, but when it's a subject that she really wants to talk about and she's really engaged in, she give really good answers. And I think she spoke from the heart about what Emma Hayes means to her and has meant to her career. And it really showed the special nature of the relationship that's powered a lot of Chelsea women's success. And I think supporters will be able to go back and look at all the great goals she scored and assists she provided. And so I think it's a nice time to bow out. It'd be amazing for both of them if they were able to bow out with an unlikely, probably the most unlikely WSL title that they'd have won together. And it's there to be won now.
It sure is. So Kirby, Maren Mjelder and Emma Hayes all gave speeches after the game to the crowd. Simon, bloody hell. I mean, to go from what we saw on Wednesday, where they look on the floor at the end of the game, they couldn't defend a corner to save their lives, to go and smash, I know Bristol City have been hopeless and were relegated a while back, but to smash your opponent 8-0 off the back of that, 4 for Giro Wright, and Aggie Beaver-Jones again showing that she's the future of this Chelsea team. What a comprehensive victory. And how on earth are Manchester City feeling? So they lose 2-1 late on to Arsenal earlier in the day, but they're probably still thinking, well, our goal difference is so good, we can afford this. Afraid not.
Yeah, and funny enough, the first I'd heard of what was going on with Man City was whilst I was waiting for Benoit Badiashile. And I think there was about, the last time I checked the score, it was about 15 minutes to go. And yeah, he just thought, well, it's all over sort of thing. And a member of Chelsea staff walked past and went, have you seen that Man City have lost? I went, and it was just like, wow. And then, yeah, he still thought, well, that opens the door a little bit. But Chelsea have just sort of kicked the door open, haven't they? And just watching the goals back, there was no real celebration of goals. It was just like, right, get the ball, let's go. I mean, they knew the mission. Obviously, I think there was a number of motivating factors. That scoreline probably being the biggest one, because suddenly it's like, right, okay, let's not only win this, but let's target the goal difference. But being Emma Hayes' last game at King's Meadow, etc., it was all set up. But to actually take advantage and go and do it was another thing. And the smiles were back. You know, the smiles were back. Emma Hayes smiling on the touchline, then swearing, you know, which shows that she's rediscovered her fight. She basically threw in the towel, didn't she? She said, it's done, it's over. Her body language was on the floor. Even Emma Hayes needs lifting, and her team has done that. And of course, yeah, that's all great and all, but now they've got to take advantage of the opportunity they've given themselves and go win at Tottenham and go win at Manchester United. Won't be easy, because those two teams will be desperate to try and stop them. And of course, City will be targeting their goal difference against Villa. So yeah, it's cracking into the title race. It's great, isn't it? I mean, Man City might not agree, but we love a bit of deadline day drama. That's what we want.
Surely the most cinematic end to the season would be Chelsea winning the title and then Emma Hayes offering a heartfelt thank you to Jonas Eidevall for opening the door for Chelsea's revival.
Or maybe Lauren James gets the winner away at her old club, Man United, and it gets deflected in off Millie Turner or something like that. Chelsea's still got a couple of games to go. So City got 52 points. They've got one match to play. Their goal difference is plus 45. Their last game, the last round of fixtures, is Saturday the 18th of May. They're at Villa. Bit of extra spice to that is that it's Carlo Ward's final game as Aston Villa manager. So some extra motivation for them. Chelsea got two left to play. They go to Spurs on Wednesday the 15th. That's the Spurs of Drew Spence, Bethany England et al. And they're in decent form as well, so that's not a gimme. And then it's at Manchester United, where Chelsea lost the FA Cup semi-final last month on the final day of the season. It is tantalising.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS. You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, elsewhere in Chelsea news, an incredible result for the under-21s on Friday night. You'll remember, listener, that the under-21 league, known as PL2, is in its first ever playoff section of this season, where the top 16 teams after 20 games play one-off matches to determine the overall champion. Chelsea took on Brighton at King's Meadow on Friday night. They won 5-4 after extra time. There were some incredible goals in the game, not least the winner from Zane Silcott-Jubri. Simon and I saw this one. You can give me your favourite goal, Simon, or you can just talk about Dujuan Richards, who seems to be a player of immense potential, as he showed again in this game.
Yeah, he's on my to-do list. I've been watching him closely for, as you know, I like writing about youngsters. But he's obviously a youngster with a twist because he's quite a little high-profile signing in as far as the academy are concerned. But it's very noticeable he's on an upward curve. Like every week he's getting better and better. And the goal he scored where he takes it on his chest from inside the area, sort of that touch, without making it sound like bad, that takes him outside the penalty area. And then I actually was in perfect view of the shot. He sort of went, oh, he's going to try for that far corner. And it was a tremendous strike. But it was an incredible game of football, both teams going at it. Brighton crossing the sea mist that I mentioned earlier. I mean, some of the challenges, one in front of me on Leo Carsoldine, screaming at him. I mean, it's an absolute shocker, and he's got a really nasty deep gash in his foot. He's out for 2 or 3 weeks. The referee very kindly, after doing a brief cursory, "You okay?" told him to get off the pitch whilst blood is sort of pouring out of his sock. Very sympathetic touch. There was also the unusual, it's not sight, the unusual sound of Mark Robinson, the under-21s coach, losing the plot. He had a tremendous verbal attack on the assistant referee on the far side after he waved Richards offside from what looked like a run in his own half. And there was also an incredibly bad non-penalty decision for a foul on Richards, which would have avoided extra time. But Chelsea are through. That's all that matters. Actually, yeah, I think it's got to be Zane Silcott-Dubri for goal of the game, surely. I mean, it was, and his mum was there to see it. by the way. I accidentally bumped into her. I'd never met her before, but I was introduced to her. I think I heard her screaming, understandably so, because it wasn't just a lob over the goalkeeper. It was from an awkward angle whilst on the run.
It was more of a kind of fizz than a lob as well, yeah. Like more of a golf
shot.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, well, thank you for bringing one of my favourite pastimes into the pod. But yeah, brilliant, brilliant. It was a great night, and they played one step beyond at the final whistle, unlike the Stamford Bridge 24 hours earlier. So they play Arsenal away at Arsenal now in the quarter final this weekend. Unfortunately, I won't be able to be there because I'll be covering the straight out of Cobham derby. But yeah, good luck to them, and yeah, it's good to see them play like that.
Yeah, Arsenal thrashed Manchester United, so that's Chelsea's next opponent. And not such good news for the under-18s, though. They would have won the PL South title had they beaten Norwich at Cobham on Saturday, but in front of onlooking John Terry and Levi Colwill, they slipped to a 2-1 defeat. They'll get another shot at clinching the title. On Tuesday, though, they go to Southampton. It's an 11 a.m. kickoff. It's live on the Chelsea app, if you'd like to join me for that one. All right, we're just about done for today. Remember, you can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SO Cobham Pod. If you want to get in touch with the show via email, it's soc@theathletic.com. Leave us a nice review on Spotify, Apple Pods, or wherever you get your podcasts, and we would much appreciate it. Liam, you've given a little plug for your post-match piece. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, so it was hooked on Chelsea's fourth goal. Madueke's assist for Jackson, what that symbolised, what Mauricio Pochettino felt that said about the growth of his team. And essentially, it's making the point that Chelsea look more of a team now than they did in August. And that's something that ownership and the co-sporting directors, Lawrence Stewart and Paul Winstanley, who I saw walking across the Stamford Bridge pitch shortly after the final whistle against West Ham, will have to consider when they make their bigger evaluation of Pochettino. A couple of weeks ago, I think that evaluation might have looked quite different. And I was of the view, actually, before the last couple of games, that with so much of the season already in the books, it would be unlikely that anything would happen now to really move the needle one way or the other in terms of the decision they make on him. But the things we're seeing from Chelsea, the way this group seems to be gelling finally, and pennies seem to be dropping on certain things, can only help his cause and back up what he's been saying, that this is a process and that it's moving in the right direction.
Simon, anything you'd like to plug?
Well, I think now's sort of following on from what Liam's saying. So I am going to, I think he's going to run tomorrow, but I'm basically debating, should he stay or should he go? That's basically what I'm about to write as soon as we stop recording. So it's going to be a pros and cons sort of thing, because it almost feels like that's where we're at, right? It feels like, there's pluses and there's negatives. And I'm sure that's exactly what the owners and the sporting directors feel as well. So when they actually come to making their decision.
Can we just say that ordinarily this would have been conversation between myself and Simon? That's the way we usually do these pieces. But he's cut me out to have an argument with himself.
Oh, I've lost it. I'm giving you all an insight into how my brain works. Well, it does work, by the way. I know I'd probably give the impression it doesn't. But yeah, I'm constantly arguing with myself about a lot of things.
Sources speaking anonymously to protect relationships told me that you're actually going to be doing it with Eric, who emailed in earlier, but that's TBC.
Actually, I am Eric. I basically emailed, and it was my way of getting out of a question that I knew you were going to ask.
Theathletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. That is the best way you can support this podcast. It shows our bosses that people listen to it. So if you could do that, that would be tremendous. All right, we'll be with you slightly earlier than normal for our second show of the week. That's going to come out on Wednesday. Looking ahead to Forest and plenty more beside. Join us for that if you can. Until then, thanks to Jesse, to Liam, to Simon, to Lucy, and to you for joining us today. We'll catch up with you again soon. Bye for now.
The Athletic.